Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT TV. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable examining some of the top stories of the week. My guests are Denise Roelark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and Keith Alexander, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter with the Washington Post. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Gary calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Gary. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, pleasant good evening, Harold, and to you and to your guests. You know, we are no closer to solving the crime issue in D.C. or Baltimore or any of the other cities in the U.S. We're no closer to solving that than we are to the border crisis. It's an issue that we legislators have failed, both on the local level and on the national level, have failed to address. Our mayor in Baltimore has addressed this issue. It has to do with coming up with reasonable and effective gun legislation. Maryland does allow for the citizens to have a carry permit. That's a good start, but something more needs to be done on a national level.
Gary, did you say we legislators?
Yes.
Are you an elected official?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, I'm not. I am a resident. I live outside of Baltimore, White Marsh, and my church is in the city, and I'm very concerned with this violence, this crime, especially with our young folks.
So, Gary, can I ask you a question? You said that Baltimore has tried to address this. What do you think Baltimore has done that might be working or has worked?
Well, I think just talking about it is one. Working on our youth, I know that the state attorney, Ivan Bates, has made some proposals in the legislature to begin looking at effective ways to curb the violence with our youth. We have to start somewhere, and that would be a most effective place to start looking at legislation that puts criminals, takes them to task, and makes sure that the laws are upheld.
Okay. Gary, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. One of the things, Denise, that came out last week, and we talked about it on this program, but I think it's worth mentioning again, when in Prince George's County, County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy and Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks met at Flowers High School with young people from across the county to talk about what they believe is the genesis of the increase in youth-related violence. And the main thing that came out was young people. They were saying that it's the internet, that it allows them, specifically social media, it allows them to be other people, to be big, to be bad, to be bold, to be threatening. But then what happens is those young people who otherwise would be shrinking violence come across someone who is not. And then they come after them in real life. They also said that poor parenting, and this may be two sides of the same coin, and lack of familial support. So
I would just jump in and here and say that one of the issues that I know that the Attorney General is supposed to be looking at in the District of Columbia is if a parent finds a gun in their home or in their child's room, what process can that parent take to get that gun away? I mean, to turn it over to authorities without necessarily turning their child over to authorities.
Well, you know, I would like to take it even further than that. What surprised me, I recently did a case where this young man, the young man who was charged with the Mother's Day shooting of 10-year-old Ariana Davis, they found they found handguns, two handguns under his pillow
right. In
his bed.
Right.
They found two assault weapons under his bed in his mama's home.
Right.
But yet he was the only one charged. Now, my question is, when are we going to start charging parents or homeowners or people whose homes these are, where guns are found that belong to these teens?
Well, that's the situation that some of the parents find themselves in. That, yeah, they find, may know or find or come across a weapon in the home. They want to get the weapon out of the hands of the child, but they don't necessarily want to turn their child over to authorities. How can parents do that? They are looking for answers. An attorney general was supposed to be getting back with someone in Ward 8 to answer that question. Also, if I'm not mistaken, I thought I heard on a news report yesterday that it's either school superintendents or school districts now that are filing lawsuits against social media companies because of the impact that they're having on young people. Police will tell you now. Especially, you know, these young wannabe rappers or what have you.
Yes, definitely.
I mean,
they're
telling the stories about rapping about crimes that they're about to commit, did commit.
Beefing with neighborhoods, all in the lyrics.
It's a lot that's happening on social media. To me, a cell phone has become just as dangerous as a gun. And we don't have any reins around how social media can be used by young people. People are making money off of the cell phones and off of the social media platforms, just like they're making money off of weapons. Everybody's making money off of gun violence. Everybody, except the victim and the perpetrator.
Who's everybody?
Oh, so I mean, you know,
other than gun manufacturers, yes.
Well, the police, the courts, the jails, the hospitals. The doctors, the you name it. When a person gets shot, the community that has to come into play to address that issue is an employee that's getting paid to do that job, right? So if we were to stop gun violence tomorrow, if we were to stop it tomorrow, which we would love to do, people would, you know, now have to find something else to do. Right?
I don't think that the hospitals would still be busy because we have car accidents, because we have sickness and other things. I think,
and those people that sit in those waiting rooms because they haven't been shot.
No, I get that, but I'm saying that yes, I agree that there would be a huge shift if we could end gun violence tomorrow. But I would still think that there are still some of those same entities.
Right. Yeah.
They're still going to be fires.
Right. We're
still going to need firefighters. We're still going to need paramedics, EMTs.
Still going to need jails.
I don't disagree with that. But I'm just saying that the more we study a problem and put money behind a problem and we can't solve it, means the more money we put behind the problem that we can't solve, and the more money we put behind a problem. Same thing we're talking about with the wars. You know what I'm saying? We keep putting money behind a problem that has not been solved. It's not that it can't be, but it has not been solved.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mickey calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Mickey. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. Really enjoyed your guys' program this evening.
Thank you.
To start back to your earlier conversations. We have all these senators with all these earmarks.
Turn your radio down for me, please, Mickey, and then go right ahead.
Have all these senators with all these earmarks in all their states. We have all of these corporations that are subsidized by the government. We have, as the lady on your program, she mentioned how we're subsidizing Israel and other countries. We have so much money going out and just being manipulated. We fund the Pentagon, the weapons makers, the war makers, the warmongers, we subsidize them. All they do is deal death instead of putting our resources into all of these children and babies raising babies with no ethics, morals, or just understanding of just common sense or life, they're going to continue killing themselves, us, their neighbors, and everyone around them. They have no hope. They have no training. They have no education. They have nothing. So all they do is they can't even discuss a problem. They can't use their hands as we used to. Have a little scuffle, a little fight. It was over. He went home. Today, yep. They pull a gun. They shoot. They kill each other. There's no understanding of how to even compromise or come to an understanding of a disagreement between any of them.
Okay. Well, Mickey, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate your comment. Let's go to Ido. I believe that's the name calling from D.C. Go right ahead.
How you doing? I was talking about the recent murders in D.C.
Go right ahead, yeah.
And how the victims aren't able to sue the gun manufacturers because of all these illegal weapons that are in the city and getting into the children. How are these children getting these illegal guns? And how these guns are illegal coming into the city? And that these victims of these crimes aren't able to sue the manufacturer for allowing their weapon to be released into the city and causing so much havoc. And it's almost a weapon of mass destruction itself. They have the serial numbers and all that. We live in a time and age where we should be able to track these guns. Who's just letting the guns out? They just let out. You know, the manufacturer has that serial number for the police departments to track those guns.
Yeah.
And one thing...
Well, real quick, just respond to that. A lot of these guns that are being used today are called ghost guns, which means they do not have serial numbers. These are guns that are assembled. These are guns that are piece by piece. That's why they are so popular. So a lot of these guns that are being used in these violent crimes, at least in the District of Columbia, are not coming from gun manufacturers, do not have serial numbers, which is why they are so popular.
But they're still expensive. They're not cheap guns.
Oh, no,
from my understanding,
that.
A ghost gun can cost about $300 to $500 to produce. So you got to have some money to make one.
Or they're trading. They're trading cars. They're carjacking cars, trading cars for guns.
Yeah, I know. Thank you so much for your phone call. And you know, to your point, you know, Denise, what is two or $300 or $400?
To a 14-year-old is a lot of money.
Maybe. But if you are robbing someone, if you are committing crimes, and we know that very, very young people are committing crimes, and like Keith said, yes, there may be trading on
on social media, a lot of trade.
And not even that. And I remember when we had a conversation with the Prince George's County Police Department several months ago, and they were saying that older criminals will have young kids mm-hmm. carjack cars to be used in other crimes because the penalties for younger people are not as severe as it would be for adult criminals. And in one way, shape, or form, these adult or older criminals are subsidizing the younger people. And one of the questions that was asked many months ago in our newsroom, and I have to salute our news director, Renee Nash, for bringing this up. And this is not a rhetorical question. This is a real question. Do either of you know where you can get a gun if you needed one? And I don't mean buying one legally.
I don't.
Keith?
I don't think I do.
But you would be surprised at how many people, law-abiding citizens, because everybody's got a Peanut or Ray Ray in their family.
Well, and that's why I said think.
Yeah, you have to think about it, because... When that question was first, you know, posed, my initial response was no, But the more, but then when I had to think about outside of the immediate Mercury, Venus, Mars of my circle, and started thinking about the Saturn and the Pluto and the Milky Way, you know, the outer Milky Way, the people that I have come across, could I, if I absolutely needed or felt I needed one, and that's me, good old law-abiding citizen Harold Fisher, WHUR, but then what about these other people who are not me, not like me,
who live in neighborhoods where guns are aplenty?
Yeah.
Well, I live in one of those neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to get a gun from.
Right. And because you're
but
Denise Rolard Barnes.
I'm sure that
Barnes,
I could
yes.
walk to the corner mm-hmm. and ask somebody who would know.
That's my point.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm. You asked me if I know where to get right. a gun. No, mm-hmm. I don't.
But
I
so you don't. Might know somebody who knows somebody.
Oh, I'm sure I know somebody right. who knows somebody.
Right, and who knows somebody.
Or I know to find somebody. That I may yeah. not know that person, but I right. could find somebody, right?
And I think that goes to the point about where are these guns coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are no gun manufacturers in the District of Columbia, okay? Or, you know, or legitimate.
Well, a lot of these guns, I was surprised to find out, a lot of these guns, and I think I said this before, are coming up from Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. It used to be years ago they were coming up from through Virginia.
Right.
But now they're further down 95 and they're further down to, down in Florida, up, coming up straight up through 95. Virginia is either out of the game or whatever, but it's now coming from Georgia and the Carolinas.
But my point is there are gun shops. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, well.
There are no gun shops in D.C., but there are gun shops in Virginia.
There used to be one on Good Hope Road, though.
Well, is it there now?
I don't think it is.
I don't think so. But yeah. there's a Beretta plant in southern Prince George's County.
Right. But
where?
Yes, there's. Yeah, Beretta has a not a store, but yeah,
a plant.
But let me ask you the story. What you just shared with us about the young man who had the guns under the pillow
yes.
and the other guns
under
the bed.
Mm-hmm.
We know about the story of the young man, but what's the story about the guns? Where did that story
and you
go?
Know, that's
Where did
a,
that go?
That's a great question. And that's
excuse me, wrong, real quick. Beretta USA Corporation, it's in Akakik. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a good question. Here's what's so interesting is that they cannot get these defendants, even if the kids take a plea deal, defense take a plea deal, they do not talk about where they got the guns. That's called snitching, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They, and no matter how they try, the prosecutors cannot get out of them, majority of them, where they got these guns. And I don't know if they're afraid for their families, which is probably a lot of it, but they do not talk about where or how they got these guns.
I need to move on, because we could talk about this ad nauseum, but I do want to, you know, talk about something that, and this is really kind of fascinating, where there was a doctor's group which has withdrawn its paper on excited delirium. Mm-hmm. And I think most people are saying, well, what's that? What is excited delirium? And I need to make sure that I get...
They pretty much said George Floyd.
Transient disturbance in consciousness and mm-hmm. cognition. It involves combative and or violent behavior. So, you know, indeed, during the course of an arrest and somebody becomes violent and the like. Well, this doctor's group has said that is not an argument for death by excessive force. And I think that is a huge issue. That's a huge issue because... And I'm just looking here at this information where when you're talking about Daniel Prude of Rochester, New York in 2020, in March of 2020, the officer put a hood over his head because and he was, you know, he was naked on the streets and he was, you know, spitting and the whole thing. Well, yeah, he died. And again, like you said, George Floyd and some
of
the others.
If it wasn't for that young girl in that video, Minneapolis police put out a press release that said that the George Floyd became under distress, and that's what happened. He was taken to the hospital and he died. If it wasn't for that video, that would have been the narrative. There's a Howard gentleman, Dr. Roger Mitchell, who has a book out on just this thing about autopsies and called Death in Custody, and examines. Mitch was on the forefront of arguing against this cause and letting people know that this should not be used as a reason for people dying legitimately in the hands of police officers. And this is a huge deal. Finally, police officers cannot hide behind
excited delirium. And I think it goes back to how handcuffed suspects are handled, where... You know, whether it's a knee on the neck, a knee on the back, when their chests are flat on the ground and they cannot
breathe.
They can't breathe. And I think this is an issue that police departments, large and small, will have to do their best to address.
So I've missed this story, and I'm not sure if I understand what you mean when you say excited delirium.
Basically,
is that the
heart attack, basically, that
right.
that this person,
that was the cause of death?
Exactly.
Excited delirium,
but it's a result of a knee to the neck,
right,
pressing somebody down. This is coming from the actions brought on by excessive force from the police officer.
You know, it's interesting, and this is probably not completely related, but I know that there are there are efforts out there now for people to I spoke with someone not too long ago who has this thought about something that one could put on their ID card. You know, if you are a person who has autism or some kind of condition that could be misconceived by a police officer as a violent outburst, but it's because you don't, your body just operates that way, that you can have something on your ID that really shows a police officer this is a person that could be easily stressed out. Now, whether folks would want to do that or not, but there's a movement now.
Or whether police officers would really even care.
If they feel
that their lives were now in jeopardy.
Right. If
you get to that point, might it be better if they have one of those medical alert bracelets that say the same, because getting to a medical alert bracelet is a whole lot quicker than going through someone's wallet while there is a muscular attempt to subdue a suspect. That's certainly an issue. I do also want to talk about happening right now, and I mentioned this earlier today, that the mayor of the District of Columbia, Muriel Bowser, is having these meetings about the future of RFK Stadium. Mm. She wants to bring the Washington Commanders back to D.C. There's a lot of talk about, if you demolish the stadium, you're going to have to build another one. And if you look at some of the models that we have seen across the country, I don't think that there is an appetite for taxpayer dollars. I don't care how much you like the Commanders to build another stadium.
City Council said, where's the money going to come from? Because it's not in our budget. It's not in the city. So unless the Magic and the Commanders are going to cough up that money, we should see who's going to pay for that. The residents, definitely, particularly the residents in that neighborhood, have made it very clear they do not want the Commanders coming back there.
Because when the team was there before, for years and years and years and years, and I remember when my grandparents would go, that one of the things that they had problems with, of course, was parking. And they didn't live in the neighborhood. And so for the people who do live there, the parking and all of the, you know, the rabble-rousing and everything else that comes with tailgating, and I just don't see how that is going to be possible.
Well, there is also Metro there, too. So
yeah.
Right. And I would say, I mean, one, I'm, you know, full disclosure, I can't talk a lot about the stadium as a member of the board of Events DC, so oh. I cannot go there. But I will say,
you know, there's always a moment.
Come
on
now, let's
go
to this question.
I have to disclose that, and not that I know any more than you do. I have to say that.
Not.
But you look at neighborhoods,
plausible deniability.
You look at Audi Field and that stadium, yeah. And one of the things about those two stadiums was that there was, from what I understand, and now if somebody wants to call and correct this, it would be fine, but there was very little displacement because what Audi Field is built over there by there was nothing there but warehouses, and same thing with Stadium. There was a block of, or a couple of homes over in there, but it wasn't displaced. People were not impacted as much as the stadium might be, but the economic development that has come to those areas is unbelievable.
But also that caused the displacement is the ripple effect of the stadium, the restaurants,
well,
and all of that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what caused the displacement.
We lost churches over there.
Yes, that's what caused the displacement.
Yeah, I guess.
So indirectly, it did.
So, I mean, I can see, I think that there's going to have to be, and I'm glad the mayor is doing this, and I think she's going to have to continue to listen to the residents, and if they bring a stadium to this city, which, I mean, we didn't want that stadium. I don't remember us being asked about Audi Field, but, you know, I know there was a lot of dissatisfaction and disagreement with building a baseball stadium. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
The RFK's got to come down.
It does.
That's got to come down.
Yeah.
But then what do you...
Where's the money coming to build?
What
to build
do you
it
do? And,
or to build anything.
And what does that mean, you know, for Langston Golf Course and
what does Langston Golf Course have to do with the stadium?
Well, because that's part of that area. I mean, if you're going to build something bigger and better... Okay,
well, hopefully it'll benefit Langston.
Let us hope so.
Mm-hmm.
If there's
some ripple effect, I don't know. But, I mean, that's a whole different... piece.
Right.
Yeah, because I would seriously doubt that any new stadium, let's say on that plot of land, is going to be the size that RFK is going. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be better. And all of the things that come up that impacted are going to be big. They're not just going to stick a stadium and nothing else like they did with...
Right. You'll see restaurants,
Yes.
That.
Yeah,
Eastern High School, you know, going all the way down to Eastern. I mean, that's Armory. The days will be over. I'm sure the Armory will be gone.
Yeah.
That's a major ripple effect.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dean, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Dean. What's on your mind?
Oh, wow. Yeah, thank you,
sure.
Everybody. Yeah, I first want to say, you know, I really appreciate... this station, and I have to give my respect to Miss Rolark. I knew her father, and but anyway, let me get to it. In terms of the things that you have been talking about, and in particular, this ever-growing war over in Israel and so forth. Even some of the stuff that you were talking about, you know, with the guns and the violence in the city and so forth, I think, based on an interview that I've heard on another station earlier, is the most important thing would be to have a mantra, peace. If the president had gotten off that plane over in Israel, you know, and something came out of his mouth, you know, look, we got to talk peace first before we do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that starts, you know, another mechanism, you know, to begin something. It has to, you know, ricochet in other people's ears.
Yeah, yeah. Dean, I'm really low on time, but I appreciate your comments, and without a doubt, I think everybody will agree.
You know what I'm thinking when I'm hearing
about peace
from your callers, real quick.
Yeah, real quick.
This is going to turn into Biden's Vietnam. I really, as we come up to this election, this is going to be his Vietnam.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Two big things that we need to address real quick. The Washington Informer.
Yes.
59 years.
59 years.
59.
Come on.
Yes.
Black
press.
Not Denise,
on.
But the.
Yeah, you know, but this is your father's legacy. I knew your dad. First job that I had, coming out of college, I was an audio engineer at another radio station, and when your father was there. But you know, what does this 59th anniversary mean? Not only for you, but also for the Black press?
Well, you know, as we see what's happening with media across this country, and not only just newspapers, but radio stations, TV stations, this is a tough time. And people need information that they can believe and trust, and no matter what it is. So we're all trying to make sure that we are providing that kind of information too, like this show, Harold, just to make sure that we can give the reader something that they can work with and make the quality of life better. For the Washington Informer and the Black press, we're still here. Yeah. We're not losing our Black publications. Actually, we're getting stronger. And we don't know how long that's going to last, how long this road is going to last, but we are getting stronger. And
stronger in what way?
Well, our staffs are growing. We are becoming more digital, so you can find most of us. We all have, you know, websites, we're social media, we do our own broadcasts on YouTube and Facebook. We're, you know, we are, the way I put it is, you know, the Black press may be on the back of the bus, but we're on the bus.
Yeah.
And we're moving. We are moving. As media moves and as digital expands, we're doing the same thing. And that keeps us engaged and relevant to new readers who are really interested in what the Black story is. And as long as we keep our focus on that, I think we'll be around.
Denise, congratulations.
Awesome. Thank
also,
you.
Howard Homecoming weekend, you know, Howardite. Howardite HU, you
yes,
know.
Yes, you
watch
know.
Howard.
Yes,
now.
Indeed.
You can't say that.
Yeah, I can say it because I'm here. And finally, I will definitely say this. We have seen two recent homecomings at HBCUs,
yes,
marred by violence. Here at Howard University, there will be increased security and increased vigilance. And mm-hmm. so as you come to the Mecca to celebrate and to remember and to enjoy yourselves, be safe and watch out for each other. I'm Harold Fisher. Denise, Keith, thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you, brother.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and Sirius XM and WHUT-TV. Good night.